well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you once again after a week away. And it was a good week. Hopefully you had one as well. We're going to be talking with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio here in just a moment or two. Another Monday with Mark. And a lot of stuff to talk about because I've got like a week's worth of stories to catch up on. So we'll get to that in just a second. But before we do, I want to take a moment to tell you about something I'm really excited about. It's called Freedom Chat. It's a next generation messaging app that's designed for people who still believe that privacy matters. The team just launched their alpha version. It's available today on both Android and iPhone, and I think you should download it right now. Unlike the so-called free apps that spy on you and sell your data, Freedom Chat was built with your privacy first. Your messages are end-to-end encrypted. They're not stored on servers. Even screenshots are blocked. There's no tracking. There's no mining. There's no listening in. Just private communication the way it should be. And here's something that I really like. Freedom Chat has no ties to big tech. It's built by people that I trust, and you should too. They even partner with Rumble Cloud to ensure independence. I believe in it so much that I've actually created my own private channel inside Freedom Chat at Bearing Arms Cam and Company, which you can subscribe to. And I'll be sharing exclusive posts and content you won't find anywhere else. Best part, no one can see what channels that you like or follow or the posts that you read. It is your own secure, curated feed. So if you're ready for a messenger that actually reflects your values and keeps your conversations private, head over to freedomchat.com and download it today. That's freedomchat.com, where freedom still means something. All right, let's get to our conversation with Armed American Radio's Mark Walters. A lot to catch up on, including this proposal that was floated by unnamed DOJ staffers last week to ban transgendered Americans from owning guns. Now, we didn't get any specifics. We actually haven't heard any more about it since basically every Second Amendment organization came out in opposition to this. But that's where we'll kick off our conversation with Mark. Take a look and a listen. Mark, thank you very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, sir.
Oh, it's great to be here with you. Thanks for having me today, Cam.
Absolutely. You're the first guest after my a week away, and I could not think of a better person to have here to talk about some of the stuff that's gone on over the past week. I was not on my computer. I was trying to stay away from email. I got a phone call, I think it was last Thursday morning, from somebody who said, hey, have you seen this story? I think it was on the Daily Wire. What's it about? And they said, well, the send me the link. And I read this, you know, unnamed DOJ staffers. What if we ban guns for transgenders? And I thought, oh, boy.
Yeah, here we go.
I will say at the outset, Mark, I am very pleased to see that, to the best of my knowledge, every major Second Amendment organization has come out in opposition to this. I have not seen a single one that's come out in favor of this proposal. I think it's also worth noting that the gun control groups have been pretty quiet about it. I think Brady came out with a statement talking about, well, you know, from a policy perspective, you know, from a pragmatic perspective, that is not great. But most of the gun control groups are silent on this proposal. It's been the Second Amendment organization that have come out and said, this is a non-starter. Hang on here.
Yeah. Well, there's reasons for that. As you can imagine, it was a big topic on my show last night, Cam. And during the show, a third reason kind of, or a second reason popped up in my head. First, let's take a look at this as it was put, unnamed DOJ staffer, number one.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me that this is likely a trial balloon from the administration, because as you well know, nothing in Washington happens in a vacuum. No unnamed staffer made this report, and then we didn't see that unnamed staffer was later fired for making the report. So this tells me that we don't know who it is, but there are people high up that are floating this idea. Why? Why would they float this idea? The administration, including Trump, has got to know that that is 100% unconstitutional. I don't care what your position is on the topic. You cannot ban an entire class of people from owning firearms and their Second Amendment rights and freedoms in this country. You cannot do that. And the administration and the DOJ, particularly Bondi and Trump, have to know that. So let's move on that premise right there. Why did they put this out? Now, Trump's got the Democrats on their heels, as you know. He's got them defending the indefensible right now. Mm-hmm. He's got them defending crime in Washington, illegal immigration, okay? And you just noted that the anti-gun groups are silent. Every major gun rights group out there has said absolutely not, and the press releases have been very firm. So they know that's not going to fly. So again, we go back to why is it out there? Well, if you watch the way Trump operates, and you just hit the nail on the head, I think, if you theorize it this way, that forces the gun control groups to defend the gun rights and the Second Amendment rights of a, what I don't know how large of a block, but certainly a part of their constituency. So what do the gun rights or gun grabbers do? They just stay silent on the issue because they're smart enough to figure out what Trump is doing. The Democrats, on the other hand, in Congress are kind of doing the same thing. Trump's got them to a point now. What are they going to do? Start defending Second Amendment rights? Okay. So then you look at a possible second option. If you don't believe that trial balloon, whether the trial balloon was for that reason, you can look at it this way. And this popped up on the show last night, just in conversation. I hadn't really given it much thought. This could be, again, if you look at it from a trial balloon perspective, this could be a way for the administration to float this idea out there, because we're always talking about mental health, right? Mm-hmm. The failure of red flag laws, it's a mental health issue. A lot of people believe the trans issue, of course, and there's mounting evidence that it is a mental health issue. So what does this lead to? This leads to the possible compromise of saying, okay, well, we're not going to ban guns for this class, but let's now move to the center on this, both sides, and create a mental health, some type of mental health issue here, where, and I say issue is not the right word, I'm trying to frame it the right way, but a some type of plausible mental health check on a group of people who, because you and I could name 10 trans mass shooters over the last few years, they're out there. Clearly it's an issue. So it might be just a way to get this to move into the center, to open up the discussion, of mental health. So I, you know, there's just a lot happening with this. You can go a lot of different directions here. I'm having a hard time articulating that right now, but I think you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I do. And I think all those are possibilities. You know, unfortunately, I don't think you can discount the possibility that there are, you know, folks within this administration who truly believe that transgendered individuals are mentally ill and that that alone is enough to deprive them of the right to keep their arms. Right. You know, you go back through the history of gun control, and yes, it's primarily been Democrats. But, you know, you look at California in the 1960s with the Mulford Act, right, banning open carry. There's a Republican-led legislature at the time. So I think it is. I think you also have to consider the possibility that this was an overreaction on the part of, again, some folks within DOJ. I think the fact that we haven't heard any more about this since that initial trial balloon was floated, to me suggests that perhaps there was some disagreement even within DOJ about this idea going forward. And the fact that we haven't heard any more about this, I think is a positive sign. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it was I can't remember what group it was. Maybe it was Dudley Brown with the National Association of Gun Rights. I'm sure Alan Gottlieb has said something the same thing. You know, even with a friendly administration, and there's no doubt that the Trump administration is Second Amendment friendly compared to Joe Biden's administration, we can't let our guard down, right? There are going to be bureaucrats. There are going to be officials. There are going to be people within the government's apparatus who don't believe in a maximalist position on the right to keep and bear arms, who are willing to, you know, let other considerations come into play, right? Whether it is, you know, social conservatism, whether it is the idea, again, that transgenderism is a mental illness and that those individuals, you know, should be prohibited by law from owning firearms or serving in the military or whatever. There are always going to be people wanting to put their chocolate in our peanut butter, so to speak.
That's right.
Right. And I, you know, if nothing else, I think this is a just a reminder of that fact that, listen, the Trump administration has done really good things, I think, for gun owners in the 6 months or so that Trump's second term has, you know, been underway. But we can't just assume that that's always going to be the case. We can't just assume that, all right, with Trump in charge, we don't need to defend our Second Amendment rights anymore. It is just as important for people to be engaged, for people to belong to groups like SAF, NRA, GOA, whatever your Second Amendment organization of choice, and hopefully you've got more than one. You know, just because we've got a friendly administration doesn't mean that we can let our guard down.
Yeah. And, you know, you bring up another great point. That's, you talk about the rabbit holes that we could go down with this. You are absolutely correct about that. Who knows? We don't know who put it out. And you're right. There has been silence on this. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that every major gun rights group out there, and you did mention Dudley. Dudley had some very firm statements. I was impressed with his statements about this, because what this does is opens up that slippery slope we talk about, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you ban one group, you can ban any group. What the government giveth, the government can taketh away. And it treats a right as if it's a privilege that the government can take away from you. And that is not the case, okay? I will defend anybody's right to keep and bear arms. I don't care what their ideology is. If it's if it's agreed with me, if it's an agreement with me or not, it doesn't matter to me. You have a right to keep and bear arms. If you play by the same rules I do, your constitutional right exists because it's given to you by God. It's not given to you by man. Apparently, Tim Kaine doesn't think that up in Virginia. You guys need to work on that a little bit. Good heavens, the comments he said, but we'll throw him in the mix. But yeah, these are God-given rights that cannot be taken away. You can't just strip them from a group of people. And it was an honor, and I was proud to see the gun rights groups come out forcefully and say, absolutely not. You know, you can't whack this. You can't whack this mold. It's not going to happen. But it is going to be fun to watch it unfold. I don't know who did it. I don't know the reason it was done, but there are some signs, right? That there has been silence. The anti-gunners are silent. So it tends to lead me to believe that, oh, no, if we say this, it's going to look like we're supporting everybody's gun rights. We don't want anybody to have guns. So that's a telltale thing. You know, there's just a lot happening here, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, this may have been an attempt to, you know, rope-a-dope Democrats into supporting gun rights for some people, right? Yeah. But we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. And, you know, hopefully this idea has been consigned to the circular file and we don't hear any more about it in the future.
Hopefully.
But, one of the other issues that came up last week, you know, I mean, God, so many court decisions actually last week. But one in particular from the Seventh Circuit, this three-judge panel. Yeah. So this is a case dealing with the ban on firearms from public transportation in Illinois. Right. And this case has been going on for a while. A district court judge originally granted injunctive relief to the four individual plaintiffs in this case and said, yeah, the ban doesn't apply to you because this was not a facial challenge. This was an as-applied right. challenge. But the judge suggested that this ban is unconstitutional, that there is no historical tradition of banning firearms on public transportation. Three-judge panel of the Seventh Circuit, to maybe no one's surprise, considering what they've said about, you know, so-called assault weapons and magazine bans yeah. and everything else, they came out and said, no, that district court judge is wrong. It's entirely within the confines of the Second Amendment to prohibit people from lawfully carrying on public transportation, Mark,
yeah.
which, you know, listen, I live in a place where there is no public transportation. But when I lived in Northern Virginia for close to a decade, I'd ride the Metro into Washington, D.C. It is legal to carry on Metro in Virginia, I believe. I don't take my word for this because it's been a while and I'm not an attorney. But once you cross over to D.C., it's illegal. Once you cross over to Maryland, it's illegal. And I just think about all those folks who, you know, we're told, man, this is the best thing for the environment. You don't buy a car, you ride a bike, take the train, take a bus, right? Why should we have to lose access to our right to self-defense if we're, again, doing the right thing for the environment, or we can't afford a car? Or maybe we live in a place where, again, it's not practical to own a car like New York City, right? It's much easier to take the subway, to take buses right. around. Why should we sacrifice our right? Why should we have to forego our ability to protect ourselves, not only on public transportation, but before we get on that bus, after we get off that train? Because in essence, you are denying people the right to carry throughout the entirety of their day.
You bet. And we shouldn't. At all. And it, you know, you talk about that Seventh Circuit three judge panel. The judge who wrote for the majority on that decision, if I don't believe I have his name, Judge Joshua Kolar. And here's what Judge Joshua Kolar wrote. And you'll pick up on this right away. And most of our viewers and listeners are very informed and will pick this up as well. The Second Amendment protects an individual's right to self-defense. It does not bar the people's representatives from enacting laws consistent with our nation's historical tradition of regulation, invoking Bruin, that ensure public transportation systems remain free from accessible firearms. We are asked whether the state may temporarily disarm its citizens as they travel in crowded and confined metal tubes, unlike anything the founders envisioned, invoking Bruin. We draw from the lessons of our nation's historical regulatory traditions, third time invoking Bruin, and find no Second Amendment violation in such a regulation. Now, one of the interesting things that came up on my program last night talking about this was, and I'll ask you this because it's kind of fun to think about, I can think of where was the analogy drawn from here, from the days of our founding? They didn't have metal tubes. In fact, they didn't have trains. And the closest thing we could come up with spontaneously on the air was maybe some form of stagecoach, et cetera. So my producer did a cursory Google search last night during a break and asked Google and some AI whether there were lockboxes or anything in public transportation, what would be considered like a stagecoach back then, to lock up one's firearms that these judges could use to say, well, yeah, it is historical. We can. In fact, it came back with just the opposite, that people's firearms were meant to be kept on their persons because there was no place to put them. And the best place to keep them was on their person and available for ready use. So where they're invoking Bruin here in this perverted way, which the left, we've, you know, we see the these leftist activist judges pervert these decisions. How long did they do it? Hell, they're still doing it for Heller v. D.C. from 08. Okay. Mm-hmm. But this is a pure perversion of the Bruin decision. And how right now, obviously, there's going to be an appeal on this. But when you compare what just happened in North Carolina that you and I were talking about pre-show here, mm-hmm. you had this beautiful 23-year-old Ukrainian girl who fled the fighting in Ukraine, was here in the country legally, was working at a pizza parlor, got on a train in North Carolina, and was subsequently stabbed by the guy sitting behind her in the neck in a brutal attack caught on video. She bled out on the train and died. She was ambushed. She never saw this coming. You can see the video. She likely did not stand a chance, unfortunately, sadly for her. But others on board that train could have easily, by law, put this guy down because they didn't know whether he was going to continue the attack. He had a knife. He had just murdered somebody in front of them. So this kind of ties in with the whole Seventh Circuit and to your question, why can't we protect ourselves going to and from work? So great question. And these just kind of happen near the same time, and it just invokes a great conversation to have.
Absolutely. I mean, well, yeah. Listen, Mark, I've been following this case out of Illinois for a couple of years, and every time, I don't even actually wait until there's an update in this case. You know, every time I see a story about an armed robbery on a Chicago Transit Authority train, which happens all the time, by the way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's why I laughed when you were quoting the judge, and he talked about, you know, the ability to ensure that these environments are weapons free. Chicago's L trains are not weapons free.
Right.
They are designated as gun free zones. They are not gun free. The people who are carrying, though, have no problem violating the law. They don't care about violating a ban on possessing a firearm on a public train because they're committing armed robberies on that train. Right. Mm-hmm. They're committing much more serious offenses. So it is utterly laughable to suggest that these gun free zones are effective. But,
so
you know,
sad.
They also, you know, going back to the flouting of Bruin while citing Bruin, the Supreme Court in Bruin specifically said, listen, you can't just designate a crowded public place as a gun-free zone, right? If you did that, the entirety of the island of Manhattan could be considered a gun-free zone, and that wouldn't fly. But right. That was the entire justification for that Seventh Circuit panel. Well, this is a crowded public place, so therefore guns can be banned. Well, no, that's not the standard that the Supreme Court laid out. Quite the opposite, as a matter of fact. You know, there are no special precautions. It's not like there are armed security guards in every train in Chicago, mm-hmm. right? You have police at the platforms. But again, no special magnetometers to go through to get on a train, nothing like that. There's no special security measures in place in these facilities. It's just the same law enforcement presence you'd expect to see throughout the rest of the city of Chicago. So what makes this a sensitive place in terms of how the government treats this property? And I would say they don't treat it as particularly sensitive, other than, again, slapping that gun-free zone sign up and pretending that that makes a difference somehow.
Yeah, and there's an FBI, I'm going to play the audio tape on my show today at 4:00 Eastern, 1:00 Pacific on Armed American Radio's Daily Defense, of a former retired FBI special agent. You know, we get these guys that come out and make these dopey comments. This particular individual is talking about how on the train, he says, well, you know, the train in North Carolina, of course, they did a lot of things right. They have a great camera system because the cameras are there. This, of course, acts as a deterrent. He's talking about a woman who was just stabbed in the neck. How much of a deterrent was the camera?
Right.
And I'm thinking, you're saying this with a straight face, bro? Seriously? Okay, now Angry Mark starts to come out with this because cameras don't stop criminals. All right, number one, this is case in point. And number two, he was talking about how it led to an arrest for murder that should never have happened. And nowhere in there does he talk about or invoke the conversation that we're having right now and how you should be able to defend yourself on these trains. Now, again, this woman was ambushed. It was horrible to witness. If you've seen the videotape, it's just god-awful to see. So she likely didn't stand a chance, sadly. But I will say this, and I'm not victim blaming. This is evidence and proof of why when you're on these metal tubes, to use the judge writing for the three-judge panel, that you've got to be aware of your surroundings. When you look at the video of her getting on the train was somewhat empty, and she walked right up and sat directly in front of this person with her face in a phone, paying no attention to who was sitting behind her. Now, as it turns out, again, not blaming the victim, she had no way of knowing she was going to be stabbed in the neck with a knife a minute later and be dead. But I've got to point out, because we just would be remiss not to, that you've got to pay attention to your surroundings when you put yourself in a public position like this, in a public space, to look around you. Pick a seat that's away from somebody else. Don't sit directly behind somebody that you can't see. Turns out this guy had done 5 years in prison. He's a violent felon, and he's been arrested multiple times since 2011. And here these people walk amongst us every day. They're behind us in lines at the bank, gas stations, grocery stores. It doesn't matter, folks. Please pay attention. In the meantime, if you're on one of these, I'm not telling you, as A.W.R. Hawkins made clear on my show last night, I'll repeat him. He said, I'm not telling anybody what to do. But if I'm on a train in Chicago and I get attacked, I'm shooting. So there's that.
There is that. I mean, it gets back to the right, the better to be judged by 12 than carried by six. And, you know, unfortunately, again, that shouldn't have to be the choice that people make. Right. Am I going to violate the law in order to protect my life? Particularly when, as you say, there is no, and even the Seventh Circuit dodged this by saying, well, this is, you know, an unprecedented societal concern, right? There's no way to find a genuine historical analogy, because public transportation like subways and buses, they didn't exist back then. No, they didn't. But public safety was a concern. Public safety in crowded places was a concern in places like Boston and Philadelphia and New York. And we did not, again, see these types of wholesale deprivations of the right to bear arms in self-defense.
Yeah, and I'd like to make another point on that. Because the judge did mention this in that writing. He said that the founders could never have envisioned. Well, the founders couldn't have envisioned my AR-15s, plural, because I have many of them, right? But they are protected by the Second Amendment, even though the founders could not envision them, hence the word arms, and not rifle or musket, but arms, plural. The founders were brilliant. They knew what they were doing. And for that matter, I guess the judge didn't realize when he was typing on his computer that the founders couldn't envision his First Amendment protecting his Apple notebook as well.
Yeah.
So he really made himself. He's going to be a victim of an appeal. They're going to appeal this to either an en banc panel hearing, or they can appeal directly to the Supreme Court. So we'll follow this one because it's going to be fun to watch. I think they eventually lose.
I sure hope so. You know, the opposite, again, the Supreme Court upholding these bans would just be absolutely terrible for our right to keep our arms in big cities. I mean, honestly, you know, millions of Americans would be impacted by that. I get the argument. Crowded subway car, somebody, you know, whips out a knife or whips out a gun. You pull out your gun in self-defense. You know, does the likelihood of somebody else, an innocent person, getting injured increase? Sure, it absolutely does. Does the likelihood of more innocent people getting injured or hurt by that person who's wielding the knife or the gun also increase if they are not met with some type of armed response? I would
see Walmart. Walmart.
Absolutely.
Just a couple weeks back.
And, you know, and again, we have to talk about what happens before you get on that train, after you get off that train, the fact that you are now not unable to protect yourself in places that aren't crowded public spaces.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot that this panel got wrong. And I'm with you. I fingers crossed that the Supreme Court will take this case and get it right. I frankly, I'm not the attorney, but I wouldn't bother appealing this en banc to the Seventh Circuit. Seventh Circuit is such a disappointment when it comes to our Second Amendment rights. I'd take
this right to the top.
Great to SCOTUS. Absolutely.
Because the case needs to be heard, and I appreciate you having me on to discuss it, Cam.
Thank
you so much. Always a pleasure to join you on Mondays with Mark.
I always love it, man. Let's plan on doing it next week.
Let's do it.
All right, and I already I had to give a rain check for yesterday because I was on my way back home. But Sunday I'll be with you on the MonsterCast, right?
You will be on the MonsterCast Sunday, and you and I will be together on the 26th, 27th, and 28th in Salt Lake City for the Gun Rights Policy Conference and board meetings and everything else. I'll be emceeing all day Saturday. So viewers, listeners, please come out to see us in Salt Lake City, 26th, 27th, and 28th. It's free to attend. saf.org/grpc. Be there. Meet us.
There you go. Mark Walters, Armed America Radio. Thanks so much, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. My thanks to Mark for joining us on the program. Great conversation, as always. Be sure to check out Mark's Daily Defense and then, of course, the Monster Cast on Sunday night. Let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Minneapolis where a carjacking resulted in two people dead, a young child critically injured, and the suspect in this case, well-known to law enforcement, a 45-year-old, Troy Mike Payton, arrested and taken by emergency medical responders to a local hospital after this a carjacking. This happened last Thursday morning, where Payton is accused of, again, carjacking this vehicle, speeding through various neighborhoods, firing a gun at police, then crashing into another vehicle, killing two women who were in that car and critically injuring another child, 25-year-old Marissa Artis Casebolt, 25-year-old Liberty Borg, both killed. Borg's 6-year-old son, Grayson, was a passenger in that vehicle, seriously injured as well. His grandmother, Nicole Page, in a GoFundMe, said that Grayson's undergone surgery to repair the injuries endured during this accident, but still has a long journey ahead of him. Along with his physical pain, he's experiencing emotional pain with the grief of losing his mother. She added that Grayson is expected to make a full recovery over time, but he will have a lot to adjust to. The 45-year-old has been charged with both state and federal crimes. Statement from the U.S. Attorney's Office says that a carjacking resulting in death is a death penalty eligible crime upon conviction in federal court. The Minneapolis Star Tribune says that court records show Payton's criminal history in Minnesota includes two convictions, each for illegal gun possession as well as fleeing police, one for assault, auto theft, tampering with a vehicle, three for driver with a suspended license or driver with a revoked license. He also has a pending felony drug possession charge from Ramsey County. Those were just the convictions for this 45-year-old. And again, because of his violent criminal history, sounds like he was ineligible to possess a firearm. So this wasn't just a, you know, possessing a firearm without a license. It wasn't merely a possessory offense. So again, you got to ask the question, why was Payton out and able to allegedly commit this carjacking last Thursday? Don't have any answers. And frankly, I don't expect to get any from Governor Tim Walz or the DFL politicians there in Minnesota. They're too interested in trying to pass more gun control laws after the shooting at the Minneapolis church a couple of weeks ago to worry about, you know, garden variety crimes like this and what we can do to deal with repeat violent offenders. On to today's Armed Citizen story from Jacksonville, Florida. A neighbor says man who fatally shot burglary suspect has had multiple break-ins over the past few months. Jacksonville Sheriff's Office says the homeowner shot the suspect in defense of himself. So this happened, I guess it was early Friday morning. Jacksonville Sheriff's Office says an investigation indicates that a man may have been involved in a burglary at a home, that the homeowner shot the individual, quote, in defense of himself. Sergeant Highfield with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office said, based on what the initial thing that we've seen now, it appears the individual may have made entry into the home. That alleged burglar apparently died at the scene. As of latest report, he has not been identified. The homeowner was questioned in connection with the incident, which is going to happen anytime you've got a fatal shooting there. A neighbor, Tony Simmons, talked about what she saw Friday morning. She said, you know, a beret of lights like a lit up Christmas tree. She said it is not the first time, though, that somebody has burglarized at home. She said he's had two or three break-ins in the last month. And News 4 Jacksonville quoted her as saying that she has mixed emotions about killing someone in self-defense. She says, to take a human life is a very serious thing, but out of a threat of losing my life, there's no hesitation, which doesn't quite frankly sound like mixed emotions. Yes, it is a serious thing to take a life. And even when you act in self-defense, there are going to be a lot of emotions that come with that. There's going to be a lot of struggle that comes with that. But again, if you are in justifiable fear of your life or the life of another, I think most of us, at least theoretically, would say the same thing that Tony Simmons says. No hesitation, right? You act to protect those innocent lives. And it sounds like that was done there in Jacksonville, Florida. We'll give you any more updates if they become available. Finally, today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Some employees in the town of Hondo, Texas, who saved a baby from the baby's father, apparently. This is just a terrible story. I'm glad it's got a happy ending, but News 4 in San Antonio says the incident began actually in San Antonio last Friday afternoon. Bexar County Sheriff's Office got a call from a mother who reported that her husband had driven off with her infant son, Silas. Family had stopped at a gas station to adjust the child's car seat, but then when mom got out of the vehicle, her husband drove away with Silas on his lap, leaving the car seat behind. 40-year-old Kyle Bruce, the father who allegedly did this, deputies alerted nearby patrol units. A Bexar County Sheriff's deputy attempted a traffic stop, but Bruce then allegedly sped away, which led to a high-speed chase. Authorities eventually called off that pursuit because of the danger to the child. They didn't want to, I mean, again, he's not in a car seat. He's not secured, so can't do a pit stop, right? You can't try to, try to force that car off the road. So they just had to hold back. So then, a little while later, police in Hondo, Texas, got reports that Bruce had been seen at a place called Peerless Equipment. Witnesses say he tried to harm the child and actually placed the child in a dumpster, but several employees were able to intervene and restrain Bruce until officers arrived. According to News 4 San Antonio, the infant was taken to a hospital for evaluation, later reunited with his mom. Investigators say Silas is expected to make a full recovery. Bruce, meanwhile, arrested by the Medina County Sheriff's Office, charged with, among other things, abandoning and endangering a child, as well as evading arrest. Clearly some unknown circumstances here. This is not normal behavior. So we don't know what the motivation was, why this allegedly happened, but in the right place at the right time to save that child. The anonymous Good Samaritans there at the Peerless Equipment in Hondo, Texas, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, I'm looking forward to being back here behind the microphone once again tomorrow. But you don't have to wait until then to find out the latest segment of news and information. Just go to BearingArms.com. We're keeping you up to date throughout the day, whether it is legislation like the clock ban proposed in California, whether it is litigation like the dozens of court cases we've got going on around the country, regulations like the one that's floated by those anonymous DOJ staffers. We've got you all covered there for each and every one of those items. Have a great rest of your Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.